You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Romillo, credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes.
Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get 20% off your next order.
He's a reporter with the Washington Post, the co-host of multiple podcasts, including Open Floor and The Greatest of All Talk, and his in-the-works book, Bubble Ball, will be about the three-plus months he spent in Orlando covering the NBA restart. It's Ben Golliver. How are you doing, Ben?
I'm doing very well. I'm back home in Los Angeles. Had a kind of a harrowing experience getting through the Orlando airport, but I'm not sure you guys down there are totally convinced there's a pandemic, but there is. Now I'm back home and just kind of relaxing and trying to figure out how we're going to pass all this time with no basketball.
It's a tough readjustment. I mean, outside of the lack of basketball, how is everything going? I'm very curious about trying to get back into the normal swing of things, considering the fact that you were, we heard Frank Vogel on the Zach Lowe podcast talking about that now he has to deal with roommates again for the first time in 3 months because he has his family. So it's a challenge for everybody. Have you had any kind of, outside of the Orlando airport, any kind of experience where you've been like, wow, this is, I wish I was back in the Orlando bubble?
Well, the main thing is just I feel naked all the time because I don't have to wear my magic band. I don't have to wear my credential and all the other things that, you know, the proximity alarm that we had for the social distancing, all these other devices that they loaded us up with in that bubble. I mean, it almost kind of felt like you were putting on your like coronavirus battle armor every morning when you woke up and you had to go through all these various stages to, you know, get tested, but also report any possible symptoms and go through this questionnaire and all of it. And obviously I don't have to do that anymore. So I've actually been just kind of out of habit taking my temperature every morning just because I've been used to doing that for 3 months. And, wow. And you know, there's a few things like that that I've been, you know, kind of carrying over. I imagine after more time passes, I'll probably stop doing that. But the airport thing was really jarring, you know, because in the bubble, other than fist pounds and a few hugs after Ruth Bader Ginsburg's death, I basically hadn't touched anyone else for like 90 days. And I wound up getting patted down in the TSA security line. And that really just kind of threw me for a loop. Like I was pretty uncomfortable with someone else being that close to me after so long and having other people just sort of, you know, in the vicinity, not totally socially distanced, really, you know, it was just really an uncomfortable feeling after so long of living so strictly. But other than that, you know, I'll say this, it's pretty easy to reacclimate to Southern California. We got perfect weather, went on a beautiful hike yesterday. I'm able to take a little bit of time off here and catch my breath. So you add it all up and I'm doing just fine.
Well, that's good to hear. But I had to kind of burst your bubble, no pun intended. You know, you've been covering the Lakers pretty heavily over the last couple of months, but this conversation will be mostly on the Miami side of things. So I know that already gets you even more uncomfortable than you were at the Orlando airport. But I think the overall story, when you look back at Miami's NBA Finals run, is the performance of Jimmy Butler. And I was wondering if there were any takeaways that you saw from that, because we saw obviously his game three and game five performance, and you know, the look of Butler exhausted as he's hunched over the table there was one I think that will remain iconic when it associated with the NBA Finals, at least in this particular run. But was there anything that really stood out to you about Jimmy's performance there that maybe we didn't get to see watching at home?
Well, first of all, I would just say that I was the first person who did a national profile on Jimmy. I put him on the cover of Sports Illustrated 2015.
Yes.
And so he's somebody whose career I've tracked very, very carefully whole way through. And so to see him have those moments of going head to head against LeBron was validation for an awful lot of hard work for him. I mean, it's not just about the criticism of, oh, is he a leader? Is he a bad guy? You know, is he the rotten apple and all those kinds of questions that came up. But this has been a really long, slow grind for him all the way going back to when he was a teenager and homeless and, you know, trying to get himself onto the college basketball map any way he possibly could. I mean, all those kinds of things were going through my mind as I was watching him go toe-to-toe with LeBron. The other aspect of it was just his previous heartbreaks against LeBron. You know, when he was a member of the Bulls, LeBron was a member of the Heat. I'm sure you guys remember that series well. Jimmy playing all 48 minutes in 3 of the 5 games. You'll remember LeBron hitting that game winner in his face when he went back to Cleveland in 2015. Another one where Jimmy left that building just irate. I think as that series ended, he didn't want to speak to reporters at all. I mean, he was just totally distraught and frustrated by that loss. So to get another shot at LeBron, I think for him was a long time coming. I think he was very, very eager to have that shot. I'm sure you saw all of his comments coming into the finals about, you know, you've got to go through LeBron. Yeah. This is just sort of how it's been during the NBA for the last 10 years. There's a lot of respect factor there, but it's also very much like, you know, a rivalry that people don't talk about. I mean, I think it's certainly a rivalry that Jimmy, you know, looks at and circled and had it circled before the finals. So for him to get those two wins, look, I mean, it's not as good as a title, obviously, and they're all going home in heartbreak. You could see it from Eric Spoelstra's post-game press conference after spending 3 months in a bubble. To lose at the final stage is really, really rough, especially when you expended as much energy as they did. But I think for him, he got his, like, Allen Iverson in the finals moment there with the 40-point triple-double and with, you know, the sensational Game 5 performance. I think it's going to be one of those iconic sort of underdog type games that people always look back on with a healthy level of respect. Hey, you didn't win, but this was a different kind of performance in defeat. A little bit like LeBron when he scored 50 plus in the J.R. Smith blunder game against the Warriors, right? Sometimes those kinds of losses stick with people as well. And I think that's going to be the case for Jimmy. And he put it all out there. I mean, I'm sure you saw the video too of him walking and, he was not moving great pretty much from the second round of the playoffs on. So the fact that he was able to keep going deep into his reservoir of you know, his gasoline and still finding ways to do it was just remarkable. So I won't forget his aspect of his role to it. And I think his leadership stuff in terms of, you know, motivating Duncan Robinson, empowering a guy like Tyler Hero, striking a balance with Goran Dragic, you know, being Bam Adebayo's hype man, the loudest voice in the room when he gets that big block on Jason Tatum. I mean, all that stuff will stick with me for sure.
You know, it's a little different. You bring up the LeBron comparison, and I think obviously he had won two titles already in Miami, so it's kind of easy to forget the big performance and defeat. But for Jimmy, not having won a title yet and maybe never even getting that chance, I think it's a little different. Is this like the defining point in his career? And moreover, do you get a sense that maybe it's changed the narrative about Butler a little bit? Because I maybe it's been a slow process all season long, a season that's lasted a full calendar year, but obviously all the conversation about him joining Miami, and that's changed to some degree, but I don't see that it was necessarily covered or talked about as much as it was perhaps within the insular, you know, bubble of Heat Twitter or Heat fandom, because, you know, obviously we saw up close that Jimmy was a great teammate and everything else. And maybe that's overstating or oversimplifying things, but on a national level, do you think it's changed the perspective of Jimmy as an individual player and as a teammate?
Well, yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at with the Iverson performance in the finals. Like, you know, Iverson never won a ring. You know, he is kind of this cult hero who had his backers the whole way through. He did it his own way. And that was sort of his pinnacle, the step over move. Like, everyone will always sort of remember that. I think that Jimmy kind of hunched over the board. I mean, that might be like his version of the step over, right? Where it's like, you know, maybe he does never win a ring. And if you look ahead to the next couple of years, is Miami really going to be favored to come out of the East unless they, you know, capitalize on this momentum and go out and land a big time superstar level player? I would probably bet against it, because I just think there's so much competition and so much parity in the top of that Eastern Conference, right? But for him, like, the questions had accumulated. I mean, he was an absolute jerk in Minnesota. There's no way around it. There's no defending his exit in Minnesota whatsoever. The Philadelphia part, you know, he was not willing to compromise. He was had his own version of how things should go. And he left there and we didn't really care too much about burning bridges. I think he even aired some, you know, dirty laundry out a little bit over the course of this season, talking about how he didn't really know who was in charge in Philadelphia and just kind of questioning the entire approach. Right. And in general, Jimmy always has a point, right? But it always goes back to this idea of, like, is it something that needs to be public, you know, and that's going to rub some people the wrong way when you're as blunt and as straightforward and as honest in your assessments of your teammates and your coaching staffs and your organization as he's been here on these previous stops. And so for him to be able to find a fit that actually worked, to find like-minded people like Spoelstra, Riley, and a lot of the other guys on that roster, and then to be the person that they all looked to when times got tough, and he was actually able to drag them over the hump multiple times. I mean, he had some heroic moments in the Milwaukee series, heroic moments in the Boston series, heroic moments in the finals. I mean, he was doing it over and over again. And I think his national reputation coming into this playoffs was he's a good guy to get you the first round and then you go home, right? That was sort of who he was. If he was going to be your main guy, it was going to go a lot like it did when he was in Minnesota, where he drags a team on his back to the first round and then it's just an easy out. And I think so from that standpoint, he's definitely enhanced who he is. And I think he's rewritten the leadership and the teamwork reputation quite a bit here. You know, I do think a lot of people were willing to write him off as a malcontent, willing to write him off as somebody who talked more than he could actually deliver. And I think he showed, you know, time and again against pretty high level competition, Giannis, Tatum, Brown, and even LeBron in some of those head to head matchups, that, you know, he's a top 10 level player and a guy who is incredibly stubborn and incredibly strong willed, but also capable of backing up what he's been talking about here for the last few years.
So you kind of hit it at before, and we'll talk about it in the next segment, but does the Miami Heat have a window for continued title contention? I'm here with Ben Golliver, and you're listening to Locked On Heat.
Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually men will just brush it off or blame themselves or avoid talking about it altogether. But Roman makes it easy and comfortable to talk about with a real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication. It's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free 2-day shipping. The whole process is so easy and discreet, you'll wish you had done it sooner. You can stop feeling uncomfortable and get started by completing an online visit. Just go to GetRoman.com/LockedOnNBA today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. That's GetRoman.com/LockedOnNBA. GetRoman.com/LockedOnNBA.
Stay up to date on the latest roster changes, rumors, and more by subscribing to the show on your favorite app to listen to podcasts, and always get the latest episode by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat when you get in your car to get your team every day. So I know it's probably not worth really digging into, but my feeling, and I think I speak for a lot of people who follow the team closely, is the great debate as to whether or not Miami had a legitimate chance of beating the Lakers. And I know we'll never find that out. But given how Bam was supposed to be as impactful as he was in the Eastern Conference Finals, that we wanted to see that matchup against Anthony Davis, and we were robbed of that. And of course, that Goran Dragic, as the second leading postseason scorer for the Heat, could have certainly provided some offensive spark there. Do you honestly think that Miami might have had a chance of knocking off the Lakers?
Yeah, they had a shot. I mean, a lot of things had to go right, even in their two wins, right? I mean, you needed like all-time career best performances from Jimmy, and then you needed.
But would you have had to have required that much? That's my thing, though. It's like, do you think you would have had to have had that kind of level of production from Jimmy if you have a healthy Bam and you have a healthy Goran? And I mean, I know we'll never know, but that's like it sticks in the craw, I think, of a lot of Heat fans following this team.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. What do you want to do? Raise a banner that says we almost did it? I mean, like, you know, you have to play the cards that you're dealt in that situation.
I know.
Was it an awesome run? Absolutely. I also think, and this is probably going to get me in trouble with your listeners, but if you look back at the last 10 NBA finals, and you rank the Miami Heat team, even at full strength with all the players from a talent perspective, of the 20 teams that were in the last 10 NBA finals, aren't the Miami Heat 20th? I mean, aren't they dead last from a talent perspective? You could look at the young 2012 Oklahoma City Thunder. You know, there's a couple other teams here and there that you might be able to kind of nitpick, LeBron's Cavaliers teams when they were super hurt. But, you know, like, it was an incredible run. They overachieved. They knocked out three teams that were higher seeds. They got beat by a much better team. They got ran off the court in game six. They ran out of gas. Jimmy took it as far as he could go. Like, I definitely understand where you guys are coming with, and Goran would have made a huge difference in this series, as would Bam. But I also think at full health, this is still a team that, just from a superstar talent level standpoint in the finals, just did not match up with a lot of the other teams we've seen here over the last 10 years.
Yeah, it's fair. I mean, it's a little difficult. one of the things I kept arguing with the host of Locked On Lakers about is that maybe you're right about that overall talent disparity. And I know it's been talked about ad nauseum even before the series, the whole ranking the top players in the series and things of that sort. But my feeling was always that with Bam or with Goran there, you could always have one of those players or somebody else on the Heat roster step up to complement or maybe even surpass the level of production that an Anthony Davis or a LeBron was capable of having on any given night. And so maybe while you could say the two best players in the series were clearly LeBron and Anthony Davis, I think there's the possibility that a Tyler Hero steps up the way he did against Boston, that Bam has a big game the way he did against Boston, things of that sort. It just never worked out.
Look, I don't know, man. I feel like Tyler Hero had his chances. He had an awful lot of wide open shots.
But without Goran there, you don't think that maybe, I mean, you're right. I get it. I just keep thinking about the series and thinking about with Goran there to kind of take some of that pressure off. And maybe Tyler has a better opportunity of being a more productive scorer.
I'm just saying he was wide open with a lot of shots.
You're right. Like, you're right.
He wasn't quite ready. Duncan Robinson was absolutely shook the first three games of the series. I mean, he was not ready for prime time, and it was so cool to see him come through in game five, but the experience factor was there for the Lakers. And I would also say this too, like, who played better team defense at the end of the series? The Lakers. You know, we assumed that it would be the Miami Heat, but you look at the first half of game six, how active, how on a string, how together, how disruptive, how energetic, how team oriented, how able to turn defense into offense. I mean, that was the Lakers. It wasn't the Heat. I mean, Miami could barely even score in the first half of game six because of the defensive intensity, versatility, and force that the Lakers brought to the table. So it wasn't just a matter of top end talent for the Lakers. I mean, I think this was a good team. I mean, I'm not trying to denigrate only the Heat here.
No.
I think if you compare this Lakers team to the last 10 champions, right, I think they're probably ninth or 10th, right? I think it's like them, maybe the 2011 Mavericks, maybe last year's Raptors are kind of in a conversation there. I mean, all the Warriors teams are better than them. I think, you know, from a talent perspective, you know, 1 to 10, I think LeBron's other title winning teams, including his other Heat teams, would have been above this Lakers version. So I think it was a scenario where like both teams survived the bubble. It was an epic final duel of, you know, who could just, you know, be the team to outlast the other. It's no real surprise to me that LeBron James, the guy who's outlasted all of his contemporaries, whether it's Carmelo, Dwayne Wade, all those guys, was the last man standing. And I don't think that should be shocking to anyone.
So you're following off of that though, like which team would have been quote unquote talented enough to be seen as perhaps an all-time great, not just a title winner like the Lakers were, but was there any team that had that kind of top end talent where they could compare favorably to another like Warriors team?
Not at all. Not this year. I mean, because look how it all spread out. All the superstars went off two by two, right? There was no four all-star level aggregations of teams, right? So you had the Rockets with their pair, the Clippers with their pair, the Lakers with their pair, the Nets with their pair, who obviously didn't show up because they were injured. Right. And the Warriors still have a couple of stars in their spot. But it was going to be a different era no matter what this season, right? And that's why there was so many questions about which team was going to be able to do it. So that's why I'm not trying to like bury the Miami Heat here or bury the Lakers here. I just think that the Lakers were clearly superior to the Heat in this series. And I think that the Heat should feel fortunate, and Heat fans should feel fortunate. They had such a fun and entertaining ride to the finals, because if you look at a talent basis on a normal year, a team with Miami's collection of talent just doesn't make the finals. That's
fair.
You know, that's what history would tell us.
No. Yeah. I know some people have waffled a little bit as to whether or not this season was a disappointment for Miami, but given everything that they accomplished.
Because
they got to that precipice, and because injuries robbed them of the opportunity of upsetting the Lakers, I think. And there are across all 30 fan bases a large pocket that says it's a trophy or nothing else matters. And I've argued recently, actually, that I actually think this was the best season in Heat history, because if you could put together some kind of mathematical equation regarding all the outside forces, the level of expectations they had preseason and how far above those they reached, that this was probably exceeding anything else that they accomplished during Wade's peak in 2006, or even during the Big Three era, where those expectations were already there. Like they were almost penciled in as a title holder from the preseason as soon as they had that formation of the Big Three there. But, you know, they fell short twice out of those four times. But given what Miami was able to accomplish this year, my feeling is it's the best season in Heat history.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying for sure. I mean, if you're saying like relative to expectations, I think that's a fair statement, like preseason expectations or even like pre-bubble expectations. I think that's a fair statement. I think anyone who views this season as a disappointment is just like too far gone, you know, like come back up for air. Like this was a dream run through the bubble. There were so many memorable moments you're going to be able to look back on: the Tyler Hero game, the Duncan Robinson game, Jimmy's, you know, three or four best games that we've already talked about. Like all of those were really fun and really unexpected. Like even as it was unfolding in the bubble, I think that there was some doubts at every step of the way heading into the Eastern Conference Finals. On paper, Boston's a more talented, better team, and Miami absolutely outworked them and out, you know, ground them up and out executed them in the clutch game after game after game. I mean, it was really entertaining to watch that happen and to see their mental will and their fortitude in those situations was just phenomenal. So look, I think the one person who has a right to be disappointed here would be Jimmy Butler, because he probably is going to go away from this series and think like, I gave it my absolute best shot and it still wasn't quite enough to get past LeBron. And this guy is going to haunt me for another year, just like he's haunted me for the last 7 years. And I also think Goran Dragic can feel disappointed because of the timing of the injury. Yeah. Right. And actually Bam to a certain degree too, I guess individually the players would have some reason for feeling that way. But I think that the Heat fan base, I mean, I'm not a big moral victory guy at all, but I mean, I'm not sure what's a better moral victory in the NBA in the last decade than what the Heat just did.
I have no idea. But we'll talk a little bit more about Miami's future, their potential title contention. I'm here with Ben Golliver and you're listening to Locked On Heat.
Always seems like we're pressed for time. And sometimes you just don't want to cook a whole meal or even spend the money that it takes to order something out. Sometimes I just want to grab a snack, something that tied me over. And guess what? I go for Built Bar because it's the best tasting protein bar I've ever had. There are so many different flavors to choose from. 18 amazing flavors, including 6 new ones: caramel brownie, carrot cake, apple almond crisp. And of course, there are 12 original flavors, all of them delicious. The bars are covered in 100% chocolate. You don't even know you're eating a protein bar because they're so soft and easy to chew. And of course, they're healthy and they're great for health conscious people. If you want to lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat, Built Bars are for you. They're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. And of course, they come again in so many different great flavors. And right now, if you go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get 20% off your next order if you use the promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com.
Reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. So we talked about it. You hinted at it before, but I think the big issue looking at Miami's future, and that's probably what we'll devote all this segment to, is how realistic they may have as far as a title window contention window is likely to happen. Because I think a lot of people see this team going as far as they did and consider them maybe among the top teams in the Eastern Conference. I'm not so sure I believe that. I think they can always be there based on the kind of chemistry they showed this year and the overall potential of some of their young players. What's your odds at maybe having a legitimate title window be there for Miami over the next couple of seasons?
Well, I think there's the possibility, but I think heading into next season specifically, I would have Boston and Milwaukee over them on paper, unless they make some radical changes in free agency. Yeah, they're in a mix, you know, in that kind of like second tier probably. Yeah. I also think, though, that they have the right mentality, which is don't fall in love with the magical run and think you're going to be able to reproduce it. I don't think that Pat Riley is going to come away from this and be like, wow, that was so much fun. Let's just run it back for the next couple of years. Like, we've definitely, you know, we've got these younger players who are going to get better. Let's just stick with our core. Like, that's never been his strategy. It's always been about be as aggressive as possible, try to make moves, make the splashy signings. Don't be afraid to pull the trigger on a big trade, like go out there and do it. And we saw that on a little bit of a smaller scale with guys like Jimmy Butler or even the Andre Iguodala trade, where there's just a a real boldness, right, to what he's doing. But I also think, like, with some of these players who are coming up, whether it's Giannis or other free agents in the next couple of years, like, this title run was the best possible showcase of what could happen in Miami, right? Like, you see Spoelstra looking like the absolute best coach in the NBA. You see a whole bunch of players who are bought in, playing hard together, who are going to get better. You see what can happen if you're a star level guy, you know, achieving your potential, if you're Jimmy Butler. I mean, all that stuff is just a really compelling sales job to a free agent, right? Because you obviously the free agents are going to care about market, they're going to care about money, and they're going to care about winning. And I think Miami can now check all three boxes. Whereas if you go back 12 months, the winning box was a little bit of a question mark because they had been in and out of the playoffs, hadn't really made any deep runs. We were struggling to kind of find that clear core identity after LeBron left in 2014. And now they check every box, right? So they're back at sort of where they were when they were trying to pitch LeBron in 2010, right? Where it's almost the, you know, it's almost like the sequel of that 10 years later. So I expect them to be very aggressive, whether it happens for this coming season or if you have to wait a year to the following year. That's kind of an open-ended question, but I think their title window will hinge not on this current group, but on whatever that next big move will be.
Yeah, I think you're speaking Miami Heat fans language there. They all want to hear exactly what you said, because obviously they believe that they're going to be able to acquire any big name free agent. And you know, I think that's just the smugness of being a Heat fan over the last 25 years of Pat Riley's tenure. But I'm curious as to why you don't think that they'll just stay Pat. And I know what you're saying as far as Riley's MO has never been to do that, but he kind of reversed course a little bit in 2016 by going through some of those bad signings that, you know, he's been blasted for over the last couple of years, obviously re-signing Deion Waiters, James Johnson, Hassan Whiteside. Maybe that didn't necessarily feel the same as standing Pat, but I you know, they weren't moves that necessarily pushed Miami's opportunities there or you know, increase their wins or anything like that. But you don't think they'll just run back this team next year as far as this offseason is concerned? Because obviously 2021 is up in the air, but if you had to put a guess as to what happens this offseason, would you say Miami just re-signs some of their players or goes after a big name?
Well, I think first of all, like, yeah, I'm speaking more in a multi-year term in terms of okay. Like, are you just going to say like, this is your core? And
that's
like,
too far ahead for Heat fans. Yeah. They can't see that. They want Giannis, Victor Oladipo, and James Harden here tomorrow.
Right. Well, I understand that. And there are a few fan bases out there that can have that kind of an attitude. And I would say the Heat fans are one of them, right? Based on history and based on the current setup. I think just in general, I expect not as much movement this offseason compared to a normal offseason because of the financial situation in the NBA where the salary cap, we don't expect it to rise. If anything, it'll be artificially held at the same position or maybe drop. So I think that's going to complicate some moves here in the short term, right? Mm-hmm. And I also think, you know, you look at their main guys, like other than Goran, do they have a major roster question?
Jay Crowder?
Yeah.
Derek Jones Jr., Myers Leonard. I mean, those are the big names as far as free agency is concerned. And I think all of them are. Yeah, I don't know. Kelly Olynyk has an option.
I was going to say, I'm not sure I would use the phrase big names for a few of those guys. but look, I mean, I could understand trying to bring Goran back on a short-term contract if you could. Yeah. I also think that one reason why I don't think they're going to stick with their current group, though, is Goran's age, right? And he's such a big part of what they've done, but you can't build a four-year plan around him, you know. So I think that, you know, ultimately there will be some changes coming to their core because he is not a guy you're going to be able to run out there when he's 36, 37, whatever years old. So that one is just going to kind of take care of itself at some point here. But I think in general, both for Miami and for around the league, I don't think we're going to see the typical kind of superstar movement that we're expected. I think we're going to see a lot of short-term contracts in free agency. Agents are going to try to cycle their guys up to whenever the pandemic is over so that it can get, you know, bigger contracts and more spending power down the road. And it's going to be a little bit of like a bridge off season where, you know, everybody's just kind of kicking the can down the road.
A guy like Kelly Olynyk, who's got an option year, does he opt in or does he take it out and kind of test free agency? Cause I think that would be a terrible move, even though he's not liable to make a lot of money even next season, given how there's going to be so many big names that are going to be more available in 2021.
What's his option for?
I can't recall the exact amount now. I want to say it's about $9 million, I think.
Yeah, I was going to guess 10 off the top of my head. I mean, I feel like if I was his agent, I'd probably just tell him to opt in. Because it does seem like a pretty good fit for him. There's going to be a chance to, you know, have another postseason showcase. And, you know, you're mentioning Myers Leonard too. So there could be, you know, there could be some really solid rotation minutes there available for him. And I don't know exactly who's going to have money to beat that offer for him at this stage. So I would guess he opts in, but I have given literally zero thought to that before you ask the question.
All right. Last question before I let you go. Obviously the big names aren't liable to move. We get all that, but that's not what Heat fans want to hear. Between Bradley Beal, James Harden, if he's getting shopped around, which I don't think that he would be, or Giannis Antetokounmpo, which of those names do you think would be the better fit in Miami? Obviously, Antetokounmpo, the more talented or at least a better player right now of those three, but given the fit and what Miami was able to show over the last season, do you see any of those being the best fit in Miami? Maybe it's a name that we haven't mentioned or discussed.
Well, how do you think Giannis fits with Bam? It's kind of an interesting question, right? Because Giannis is not a three-point shooter. I think that we reconfirmed that during these playoffs. I mean, he just didn't trust his shot. Bam, I wouldn't really view as a three-point shooter, but they're both versatile guys. You could imagine having just an unreal aggressive defense if you have both those players on the court kind of covering for each other and, like, you know, exchanging, switching everything with those two guys as your two bigs. Could be, like, just an absolutely insane basketball philosophy experiment. So, part of me thinks like this could be awesome. And part of me thinks like, oh, it would be a letdown because they wouldn't have enough spacing on offense. And, or maybe they, you know, Spoelstra would be able to work his magic and get so much movement going on that Giannis would be freed up from all the double teams and all the walls that he's been facing over the years. And he would look better, you know, in Miami surrounded by their pieces, but
he's not a good passer either. So the ball doesn't move as well. I mean, he part of what makes him so dominant is his ability to go downhill. And he just generally, we saw that against Miami. He doesn't create as many opportunities for others because he's so determined to carry the team and put up the bulk of the scoring load on his shoulders. And it works most of the time, but you know, you occasionally against the Raptors last season, against Miami this season, they seem to figure out a way of limiting him.
Yeah, I mean, so he can be a decent passer. I think part of the problem that they had is that they just got so stagnant, and then those role players are such limited catch-and-shoot guys in Milwaukee where, you know, there was a lot of times where I kind of wish that Giannis could play with the hero or play with a guy like Duncan Robinson who's just constant energy and drawing a lot of attention and creating space, or play with the Dragic. You know, like, imagine, I mean, if you just swap Giannis and Bam, how much easier is Giannis's life playing with Miami supporting cast compared to Milwaukee supporting cast in that playoff series? I mean, it's just night and day, right? So, I mean, I think that should, one should probably be your dream. The Harden fit from a culture standpoint, I would kind of wonder. You know, I think
great nightclubs. They got some great nightclubs in South Florida. You might like it here.
Yeah, I just, you know, I just wonder, he's so accustomed to having everything his way.
Yeah.
And to be, you know, having the ability to trade a Chris Paul if he wants to trade a Chris Paul. I'm not sure. I think that would sort of, there would be some tension there organizationally between, okay, who's really calling the shots here? What role do you have within the roster? And then he's also been used to playing with a lot of guys who are almost like subservient to him on the court, right? Like everybody stands around and watches him play. I don't know if that's really the best fit. And you mentioned Beal. I think everybody wants Beal. And I think he's a great fit almost everywhere. So I understand that too. But what are you giving up in a Beal trade?
Oh, yeah. I mean, everything, I suppose. Duncan Robinson, Tyler Hero. I mean, that's the potential there as far as what everybody talks about these trade talks. It's like, oh, let's throw in Kendrick Nunn and Kelly Olynyk and get back a superstar. And obviously that's not going to cut it. So I don't know. I think, you know, what we've seen.
Can I ask you, can I ask you though, how untradeable is Tyler Hero right now? Because he seems like basically the anointed fan favorite for the next decade for Miami.
Yeah.
He feels like, to me, he's on a rookie contract and he has all-star potential. I think he's going to probably have one of the best-selling jerseys before things are all said and done here in the next year or two. Yeah. So how is he even being like floated into a scenario? Like, I feel like there's no one you would trade him for, but I think it's a pretty short list of guys you would trade him for. And I don't know if Beal cracks that list, right?
I would say that for Miami and Pat Riley, they would be willing to move him for any superstar. I just think given his – look, I thought the same thing about a guy like Lamar Odom in 2004. You know, he was a guy who loved the idea of playing for Pat Riley, and he was so enamored with the idea of coming to Miami, and he had this great young core alongside Caron Butler and a rookie Dwayne Wade, and they were going to build something here in the future, and he lasted exactly one season before he was shipped out to Los Angeles for Shaquille O'Neal. So I just think, I know Bradley Beal, even in his peak, is not comparable to Shaquille O'Neal, even at the tail end of his career, but still, I think Pat would make that move in a heartbeat, to be honest with you. I understand all what you're saying, and I've talked about it a lot. Hero is definitely a fan favorite. People live and die with every shot at the American Airlines Arena, and still I think his bags would be packed anywhere. Maybe a Donovan Mitchell, I could see that being a very realistic option for Pat, also wanting to acquire Mitchell.
Okay, now we're talking. If you're getting Donovan Mitchell, I could see it. I think for Beal, I just don't think he's that player. Like, so obviously he's not Shaq, right? But yeah, the idea of the Shaq move is like we're solidifying a title team, that, or a team that can definitely win the title immediately, you know?
Yeah.
Does Beal really do that for Miami? Are you really feeling like you're winning a title if you necessarily have him and Jimmy and Bam? I mean, I think that's a team that would be near the top of the favorites list of the East, maybe the favorite. I still don't know if I would say that's a team that can definitely win a title.
What about Lillard? I mean, I know that's probably a pipe dream, but yeah, I'd see him.
Forget about that. Come on. What are you talking about? No.
I know your Portland roots and all that, but I think just Dame would on Miami's roster would be such a great thing. Like, he seems like such a perfect complement and star here to carry this team in the next 10 years. I don't know. Well, maybe I'm.
You've been listening to your commenters too much. You're going to want Anthony Davis next. I mean, come on.
Not anymore. No, it's impossible. The clutch ties don't make him a realistic option. Otherwise, yes, of course, he'd be perfect here in Miami. All right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time, Ben. As always, make sure you follow all of his great work at the Washington Post. He'll be taking some much deserved time off, but make sure you pre-order his book Bubble Ball. It'll be out next year. That's Ben Gulliver of the Washington Post. Check out all of his podcasts and all of his great work. I'm David Ramil signing off and thanking you as always for your support.